I say Greek mythology, you might say Homer's traveler Odysseus making his way home from the Trojan War, Icarus who flew too close to the sun, but Circe, maybe not so familiar. That could change. In the Odyssey, Circe is a minor character, subservient, groveling before the epic hero Odysseus, but a powerful new novel by Madeline Miller recasts Circe as a heroic feminist sorcerer who still turns men into pigs, especially when they act like them, but the groveling, not so much. We watch Circe over her eternities-long life, defying the gods, who now feel a lot like disgraced mogul Harvey Weinstein in this Me Too moment. Madeline Miller joins us from the studios of WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations as you move about. I'm sure there's like a buzz around you, as people have said, is about this book. But start with why you decided to do this. I mentioned how Circe has been seen in literature. That bothered you.
It did. You know, I think that she has been really unfairly vilified. Partially, I think people sometimes confuse her with Calypso, who is the other sea goddess from the Odyssey who has an affair with Odysseus. So I totally understand the confusion. But Calypso is the one who keeps Odysseus on her island for 7 years. And Circe, although they have that initial thing where she turns his men into pigs and would have turned him into a pig, after that, actually, she's one of the most helpful deities that he comes across. And she is very wise. She knows all about how to get past the monsters. She knows how to talk to the shades in the underworld. So I wanted to show much more of the character. When we look at her, we're looking at her through the lens of the male heroic tradition, and I wanted to widen that lens a little bit.
Well, and for those already thinking, oh my gosh, I am way too far away from my high school, you know, Greek mythology, worry not, because this reads like a Hunger Games, and there's a cast of characters in the back that you can consult. But for those who don't really know who Circe was, the daughter of the god of the sun, Helios, tell us more about her in Greek mythology.
She's most famous, of course, for the pig transformation.
Who wouldn't be?
Right, absolutely. That definitely makes your name, I think. But she also has this whole other life. She's, as you said, the daughter of the sun god Helios. She's also the aunt of the Minotaur.
The Minotaur, who was born by her sister after she mated with a bull. So the Minotaur is this, like, what, half man, half monster?
Yes, exactly. Half man, half bull. And speaking of characters who were fun to write, exploring the type of person who would give birth to the Minotaur, Circe's sister Pasiphae was fascinating.
Yes, there you go. And her family, Circe's family, doesn't particularly like her when she's growing up.
Yes, I wanted this very much, along with sort of looking at the epics, to also be the story of a woman and her family. And nobody does dysfunction like the ancient Greeks. It's another level.
Well, it's like the Sopranos or something, or or the Kardashians.
Yeah, so they, and well, you know, they never forget a slight. And if you cross them, they will punish you and your children's children on down through the generations. The Greek gods are incredibly cruel. They're very powerful. They are used to getting exactly what they want and to pursuing only their own interests and ends. And I was interested in what it would be like to grow up in that family surrounded by those type of people.
So, for instance, as she, you know, becomes a young woman and, again, is sort of shunned on the outside of this boisterous, rambunctious god family, she falls in love with a mortal. So tender, so sweet. She starts to realize she has powers. She has these transforming powers, so she transforms him into a god, and he becomes a jerk.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think that that is what would happen if you lived your life never having to suffer, never having to wait, never having to think about anyone else except for yourself, being able to gratify your pleasures in a moment. I can't imagine that that is good for the soul.
Well, and she keeps evolving because she gets banished to this island where she has to use her own resources, which are many. How would you describe her? I mean, I said feminist.
You know, first and foremost, she is a witch, which is really separate from her divinity. And she's the first witch in Western literature. And in my opinion, what it means to be a witch is that is the word we use for women who have more power than we think they should have. Mm. And that defines Circe. And what's fascinating about her is that characters in ancient mythology, women in ancient mythology, who have the type of powers that she has, usually get punished by the end of their story. They get stripped of their powers, or they get married off or killed or whatever, but they're not allowed to sort of hold on to their independence. And one of the things that is so exciting about Circe's story is that she is able to carve out this place for herself on her island of Aiaia, surrounded by her tame lions and wolves. And I sort of saw witchcraft as a big piece of that, that she has a power source that does not come from the gods, where she's able to defend herself.
You know what else also bothered me always when I was young? Because I understand you were reading this, and in many languages, when you were like 13 or something like that, which I was not doing, but this idea that women were sirens, they were on these islands and they were luring sailors to their death, always bugged me. You know, like, you have no control and you have to cast the fact that you're attracted to her. You have to make her negative. Did that bother you?
Oh, absolutely. And that was, I think, really the seed of the whole novel, which was that I felt that this moment where, you know, Odysseus shows up on her island, she's transformed his men to pigs, he goes to confront her, and it seems like it's going to be such an exciting scene, but then he just pulls out his sword and she kneels and grovels, as you say. Mm-hmm. It was so disappointing to me because I didn't want to keep the camera on Odysseus in that moment. I wanted to turn the camera and sort of examine this through Circe's eyes. And one of the things that's so wonderful about Homer is, even though you're supposed to cheer for Odysseus, you're supposed to say, yes, you know, draw that phallic sword and, you know, hold it out to her. And you're supposed to be sort of cheering for him as he forces her to yield. But I think Homer's world is so expansive that he leaves room for you to look at it from other people's perspectives.
But still, speaking of sirens, this is something that people might remember from, you know, long ago high school classes. Circe is the one who helps Odysseus when he has to go by the sirens who, you know, have these beautiful voices that draw people so they crash on the rocks. What does she advise Odysseus to do?
Well, she's the one who comes up with the idea of putting beeswax in his men's ears so that they can pass by safely. They won't be able to hear the siren song. But, and this was the part that really jumped out at me, she tells Odysseus, if you want, you can tie yourself to the mast so you will still hear it, but you won't be able to throw yourself out and you'll be able to listen to the song as your men carry you safely by. She understands Odysseus. She understands his curious, questing nature, the fact that he would love to be the only man in the world who had heard the siren song and lived. And they seem to have a very interesting relationship. As much as it was fun to explore the female characters and to give them their due, it was also wonderful to write about so many interesting male characters.
Well, and where'd you draw your story from? Odysseus and Circe have a son, Telegonus, and I understand there was an epic that had a plot that helped you, and also another poem about the voyage of Jason and the Argonauts. Mm-hmm. Circe performs this purification ritual for Jason and Medea, which is just, I mean, wacky. but you wanted to adhere to an existing storyline a little bit.
I did. There are so many myths out there about Circe and Odysseus and all these other characters who show up in the story. And I didn't just limit myself to Homer. I threw the doors open. I looked at Ovid as well. I went all the way up to Shakespeare. I went up to Tennyson's wonderful poem, Ulysses. But one of the things that I loved doing in terms of the Homer is sort of being in conversation with Homer, but having shifted that lens. So one of the things that pops up in Homer is Circe is described as beautifully tressed in terms of her hair. And I think that that is, as you were saying, sort of that's the male perspective of the alluring temptress goddess. But if you were actually a woman who was constantly in the woods and in your garden digging, you would be wearing your hair in braids. And, you know, so I wanted to kind of say, okay, the traditional Homeric version is that she has this gorgeous, sexy hair that she's just waiting around for men to show up with, mm-hmm. you know. But I wanted to say, well, how about what if her hair is like that because she's constantly working?
It's so vivid. It's so layered. You can get lost in it. Whether or not you think you like Greek mythology, it's just great storytelling. It also feels cinematic. And I'm just wondering, you know, I can picture Jennifer Lawrence as Circe. Would that disappoint you, though? Because one of the things the book has the potential to do is, you know, have people read.
Well, it is always the greatest compliment to me when people say, I read one of your books and it made me want to go on and read the Iliad or read the Odyssey. As a Latin and Greek teacher, that is just the nicest thing you can say to me. But I also have a theater background. So there's a part of me that actually really does see it as if it's happening in front of me on a stage. As I'm writing, I'm often, you know, in the scene, imagining it as if I were directing it.
Well, and we hope it includes language like this. This is Circe. She could see the vanity of the gods and the qualities of mortals. At one point, she bemoans their short lifespans. She says, no matter how vivid they were in life, no matter how brilliant, they came to dust and smoke. Meanwhile, every petty and useless god would go on sucking down the bright air until the stars went dark.
Yes, all these things that we still experience are just so vividly and beautifully portrayed in these old myths and in Homer. Hope, despair, love, grief, desire. And so even though they're monsters, that just adds to the sort of potency and excitement. But really, these are human stories, and that's what I wanted to bring out.
That's Madeline Miller. She brings it out in the new novel, Circe, the story of that goddess. Madeline, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.